44 years ago.
Yeah. That's how long I've known you. No, I've known you longer than that, right?
No, that's where we first became acquainted.
From the Fire Radio day? Weren't we at Fire?
No, we were never at... No, we
were kind both of, there.
You were there before I was, and I was there after you.
Huh.
So that's what happened there.
I thought we were there at the same time.
No, no, no.
I bailed out and made the worst career decision of my life, going over to WZ.
That was a big deal, though.
It was a big deal,
yeah,
at the time. But it crashed and burned within
rather quickly,
a year or so, and suddenly we were all out of work, hanging out in the bowling alley, eating hot dogs that had been on that roller thing for like 2 days,
two and a half days. Yeah, that's right. I would always get the last one.
Yeah, that's right there with the 7-Eleven hot dog. Or gas station hot dog. Those are not hot dogs that you want, in my opinion. The Olivia Newton-John physical, number one song, 1981, on this day.
Were you playing that on... Well, we didn't call it Super CFL when we were there.
No, I forget what we called it.
It was, for a while, it was the new WCFL.
Right. That made a big difference.
Or maybe it was just AM 1000.
We did play. I think we said AM 1000.
Yeah, AM 1000 is what it was.
That sounds right. But yes, we did play this song. It's when that, like, the fitness craze was, you know, super hot.
Yep. I would jog around the perimeter.
I know. With your sweat headband, sweatband. Your bright yellow neon, inappropriately short shorts. Always making people feel uncomfortable with your shorts. I would be in my jogging suit.
The polyester jogging.
My polyester jogging suit.
Couldn't, hard to distinguish between that and a leisure suit at the time.
Yeah. Oddly, all those things that we're describing is exactly how Jim Toronto is dressed today.
I have my leg warmers on.
Oh, that was big then, too.
Yeah.
Flashdance.
Oh, God. Well, Jane Fonda.
The Flash, yeah.
Jane Fonda started the whole thing. I don't know if Jane Fonda came first and then Olivia Newton-John made the video. Because the video was very Jane Fonda-ish,
yeah.
If you remember all her workout tapes.
Oh, it was the video. This is like when MTV was first starting.
Yeah, 81 is when...
Super controversial because, you know, there were...
Suggestive. And
very suggestive.
And there's, the guys had no shirts and she had the leotards on.
Like, I mean, Shawnee. Shawnee
was dressed like a 1974 basketball player. The tight shorts like Jerry Sloan or something.
I actually did have a polyester running suit, though.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Well, you were in the mob at that time. So
I think that's before the mob was wearing them.
Yeah, probably, right, yeah.
Yeah. Shawnee would leave faces on Rush Street in his jogging suit. And then he'd go, there was some restaurant that was open 24 hours a day on Rush Street that everybody hung out there. I don't remember the name of it, but...
I'm trying to think of it myself.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Was it one of those DeMars cafeteria things?
It might have been.
Yeah.
Is that where the station was?
No, the station was...
Oh, it was in Marina City. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
But it was right down the street.
Yeah.
Go over there and get a...
get a patty melt.
Spinach and feta omelet at 3 o'clock in the morning. Good living.
Stack of flapjacks.
Good living. How's Jim Toronto?
Well, I don't, it's fitting that it's I'm here on a Sunday. Lazarus rises from the dead.
Wild. Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be back. It's I came in here. I don't even recognize anything. Jack's over there on the other screen now. Eli, whoever he is over here.
What do you mean, Eli, whoever he is?
I don't know from Eli.
He's a very important cog in this operation.
Oh, here. Look at Jack turns his head around now.
I got bullied into it.
He looks very Eli-ish now.
Peer pressure. Yeah.
I told you I'm a role model.
Peer pressure.
Yeah, no, but I mean, Jack's gone from one booth to another now. But
when Hap and OB come in, he'll turn his hat back
around. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
He'll go for the full
sports. Well, he's barstooling.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
doing a bar stool, doing a McAfee. What is it, McAfee,
yeah.
Portnoy.
Yeah,
you know.
Look how he's progressed, though.
Yeah,
aren't we proud of our jackhammer?
Yeah,
that's right.
He went from not knowing anything about your show to now doing something that he knows about.
Right,
it's a good way to put it. Yeah,
but the nice thing is, he still takes a nap during the first half hour of the show, though.
Well, that's his.
Yeah, Jim just woke me up.
That's why he put his head on the other way.
That's his signature thing. Jack would his eyes would roll back into his head,
right,
and then he would take a nap for the first half hour of the show because he didn't know anything that Schwani and I were talking
Andy
about.
Griffith, nothing. No. No, it's been nice to be back.
You're definitely doing lots of theater.
Yeah, always. Yeah, I did.
You're quite the thespian, I like to say.
Did Network last year, which was great. Played Howard Beale, which was a great experience.
I can see you being nuts like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, believe me.
Talk about typecasting.
Yeah, that was a great. I mean, I still know that mad as hell scene. It just.
Johnny, can't you see Jim Toronto? Can't you see him
being Howard Beale?
Yeah.
Sure.
Being completely nuts like that.
Yes.
Going off.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. We all know things are bad.
Oh, apparently he's going to do a scene from the show. Who knew we were going to get
it? It's still there. No, but in fact, we can talk about it later, I guess. But I'm going to be doing Inherit the Wind.
Look at you.
Yeah, I'm going to be playing the Spencer Tracy role from the film.
Look at you.
You're going to be Henry Drummond?
Henry Drummond, very good, sir, who was the fictional version of Clarence Darrow in the infamous Scopes Monkey Trial in 1925.
Heard here on WGN.
I was just going to say, WGN.
Is that going to be part of your little play?
It's in the script.
The WGN is broadcasting?
Yeah, there's actually the radio. It's in the film, too. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, but they actually have the flag or the microphone that says WGN in the movie. And there is reference here to WGN as well in the
Do we still have that microphone, Schwani?
No, it's in the Smithsonian.
The no, it's down the hall.
I heard it was in the Smithsonian.
It's down the hall.
Oh, okay.
And that broadcast and the whole trial is exactly 100 years ago. It was 100 years ago in July.
July. Really? Yeah, in fact, when I went for the audition, that was the week that it was actually happening in Dayton, Tennessee.
Hmm.
Yeah, so.
Worth a visit, by the way.
Where Dayton? Oh, we got an early far-flung forecast.
You went there.
We went there, let's see, in 2012.
Right.
Dad and I did a road trip, and I'd never been to places like Charleston, South Carolina, and Savannah, Georgia, so we went there, and on the way home, I said, let's detour through Dayton, Tennessee, and the courthouse that the trial actually took place in is still used as a county courthouse there in Dayton. And there's a museum.
Is there a plaque or anything?
Oh, there's a plaque. There's a museum in the basement of the courthouse. The actual room is used as the county courthouse. There's a store across the street that sells Scopes Monkey Trial memorabilia. Oh, yes, that is still a very big deal.
What's the temperature in Dayton today?
Well, I can look it up.
We've done the far flung before it flung.
You've been to so many interesting places, Schwani.
Well,
your dad used to take all these great trips. We never did that.
Do you like, I mean, can you sit, like, what's the longest that you've, because you've driven all over the country, it sounds. What's the longest you can sit in a car in one stretch before you have to say, okay, I've had enough?
Well, now, are you talking about a total length of time in the course of a day?
Yeah, like in a course of a day. Like, what's the longest you've driven where you say, okay, I've got to stop.
I've got to stop. Yeah. That would have been in 93, my first Route 66 trip. I drove from here to Springfield, Missouri, which was about 560 miles or something like that.
Like 8 hours, something like that?
It was, with stops, it was more like 12.
Oh, yeah. See, I could never do that. I've driven to Detroit, and that's like five.
Oh, that's a long drive.
And I'm like, now if I ever to go, I have a friend that lives not far from Detroit, and I'm like, The plane takes 45 minutes.
Well, you know, I did that recently. When we were kids, we used to go up to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Shawnee, you've been to the UP.
Oh, one of my favorite places.
Me too. It's beautiful. We used to go up there.
That's
my friend's dad had a cabin there.
Nice.
So back in the day, my friend's dad would drive us, and it took forever.
Oh, the UP.
Did you go up to the UP in one day? Because it's long enough to go to Mackinac Island.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. We went on the Wisconsin side.
Oh, you went on the Wisconsin.
That's side. At least eight, that's 9 hours, right?
It was at least 8 hours.
Yeah, I felt like it was
36 hours.
Oh.
When you're a kid,
oh, yeah,
stuck in the back seat of the car, and then
I thought Adventureland was far.
Yeah, so. Right. Addison, Illinois.
Yeah.
Right. We used to, and when we got older, then when we got our own cars, we would drive. Because we thought we were big shots.
Yeah.
And then my friend loved it so much there that he moved there. He lives there now.
You've gone up there to visit him.
I went a couple of years ago. He had a milestone birthday, and I went up to celebrate his birthday. And it's like, yeah, I'll come, but there is no way I'm driving
there. Kidding.
And there, fortunately, you know, there are flights. There was a direct flight.
Oh, really?
That went to right to the town where he is, but
close.
Marquette?
Nearby. I think it was Marquette.
Marquette?
I think that's where I went.
And when you fly to Michigan, like it's Detroit, the plane never even plateaus.
No, it's like
It's almost like goes up, it goes straight, and then it comes down.
It comes right
down. It never even like hits
super
any kind of
flight. And all I could think of is the multitude of hours that I spent
waiting.
At Howard Johnson's and little small town cafes and things, which had its charm, but
that's half the fun.
It did
of a road trip
if you allot for that time.
If you allot for the time, you have to do that.
Shawnee, I don't know if you know, I'm very, very busy.
Very busy man.
I know
a lot
that.
Of meetings,
and
a lot
very
of meetings.
Impatient.
I'm very busy. Exactly. Like right now, I can't wait for the far flung forecast.
Well, we didn't give it away with Dayton, Tennessee. So.
Okay. You got two for the price of one
all
today.
Right. It's a twofer. Yeah, man. Two for Sunday coming up here. Yeah. Time for the far-flung forecast. But I'm unclear whether we can use the far-flung forecast music or not. Because there were, like, I don't know, like licensing things.
That's happened with my podcast.
Or something.
Now I can't use...
Yeah, it's a big,
I have an intro for my podcast.
It's a
I know
big
I have
deal.
To, I have to do it dry.
Yeah, because AI can isolate whatever music that you're using, and if you use somebody's music, then you have to
Sunday morning.
People are going to church for God.
The female dog is back, and
So anyway, that's the big deal. So
so you can't even do this?
Eli, what's the deal now?
We can totally use the music right now. I just can't post it later.
Oh, we can't put it
on the internet machine.
Thing
I just can't podcast it.
Oh.
Yeah, see, it must be a podcast thing.
Here's the far-flung forecast. Here's the far-flung forecast.
Oh, even whistling it is.
Yeah, right. You can't do that either.
Yeah.
With Dave, I'm writing this song. This is the song that I'm writing.
Oh.
I get the royalties.
There you go.
Here's Dave Schwann.
We need a jingle for this.
I have a feeling
that's gave you a
from
jingle.
From 1964.
I have a feeling yours isn't going to last as long as Earl Hagen's.
Before the show's over, here's the far flung.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Uncle Dean. And friends, get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We head way out west today.
I like when you use accents.
Out to Mariposa, California. Ooh. Mariposa, California, population 1,526.
I thought Mariposa was in Arizona.
There may be a Mariposa, Arizona also, but this one is in California, in east central California. It's been around since 1850, and in 1854, the Mariposa County Courthouse was built and is still standing and is still in continuous use. one of the oldest courthouses in the United States and the oldest in continuous use, west of the Rocky Mountains. But we mentioned Mariposa not only for that fact, and by the way, that is a neat courthouse to walk into and visit. It
what,
is.
You just visit courthouses when you go to.
Well, he goes to the Scopes Monkey Trial place.
What are you, Matlock all up when you're on vacation?
He's going to go on TikTok and rate all the courthouses.
Yeah, right.
I'm here at Dirksen.
Well, I'll tell you what. Next week, we can talk about the courthouse in Carthage, Missouri. I've been there, okay, too.
Thanks for telling me. I'll make sure I'm feeling a sick day coming on.
Mariposa is adjacent to Yosemite National Park.
There's your tie-in.
135 years ago this coming Wednesday was created as what we know as Yosemite National Park, maybe one of the most, well, not one of, maybe the most beautiful place I have ever visited. Yeah. It is.
It's gorgeous.
In a class by itself.
Gorgeous.
And, of course, you know, they've got a problem now with too many people going in to visit the park, but there's a reason why. It has to be seen to be believed. But Mariposa, California, is adjacent to Yosemite, 135 years old, and they have mostly clear skies and 60 right now in Mariposa.
I think the most beautiful, Yosemite is gorgeous. I think the Oregon coast is the most beautiful place in North America.
Yeah, that drive.
I've always wanted to go there. I haven't been there yet. Yeah.
The drive down the Pacific Coast Highway
through
there.
Fantastic.
You can drive down that Pacific coast, though?
Fantastic.
You don't get afraid?
I'm not super comfortable, but it's fine.
Afraid? I was exhilarated.
Well, really?
I mean, some places like that, there are no guardrails.
Right, that's what scares me.
There are guardrails.
Okay, cool, because that's a little scary.
Gorgeous, though. You're in the mountains. You're in the lush greenery.
In Oregon.
In Oregon.
So how far does the Pacific Highway, does it go through?
I went all the way up to Washington State.
Washington State and all the way down almost to San Diego.
Right. Yeah, I know that. I didn't know how far north it went.
Yeah. All right.
Nice.
Nice travel.
Well, Schwanee's fooled us. He had pulled a MacGuffin here. He was talking about courthouses, and then he slyly moved into Yosemite.
You know, there's a reason why the far-flung forecast is.
He takes a detour, but he gets back on the main road.
Yeah, he's won so many awards. That's the far-flung forecast. So let's start off with, without getting into politics at all, without getting into controversy at all, the Tylenol story has dominated this week. And I will only ask you this. Is there a danger in misusing or overusing acetaminophen, Tylenol?
There always is a danger in overusing anything. However, Tylenol in the safe limits, so generally that's less than 4 grams of Tylenol a day, which is actually quite a lot for the typical person.
How many tablets would that be?
Oh, gosh. So I think that there's some that are 500 and there's some that are 325 milligrams.
Yeah.
So even the 500s, you would need to take it like at least 8 of them a day to hit the unsafe limit.
That's a lot of pills to be taken.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
And so the controversy was about pregnant women taking acetaminophen. Let's just talk about, the average person. Is it safe for the average person to use Tylenol?
It absolutely is. And for some people, they don't really have another option. As long as you are not taking it with alcohol, it is a good option if you have minor pains. Typically, we use it for things like headaches or joint pains that are on the lower side, and then when you have a fever, and if the fever is making you feel bad, then the acetaminophen can help make you not feel quite so bad from that fever. So for the typical person, over about 6 months of age, it is fairly safe.
Yeah, my doctor, for example, encouraged me to use it when I have aches and pains, as opposed to actual aspirin or other pain relievers, which also have dangers, I guess, if overused, right?
That's absolutely right. We worry about things like aspirin and ibuprofen and other things that are in a group of medications called NSAIDs, because they can impact your stomach, they can impact your kidneys. And so, as I said at the beginning, anything in moderation is usually better. If you take too much of anything, it can have side effects.
I mean, I have high blood pressure.
People,
have high blood pressure.
Like you,
and you can't take ibuprofen, right? You have to take acetaminophen if you have high blood pressure. Yeah.
Right. And part of that is the impact to the kidneys. And we also know that it can actually increase your blood pressure. And so acetaminophen is the preferred option.
Yeah. So, you know, so there's that. And I guess, you know, the bottom line of this whole thing is check with your physician, because your own body, your own metabolism, your own health condition will dictate what's best for you. Right. I mean,
that's absolutely right.
Seems to make the most sense. All
right.
That's
absolutely right.
Let's move on. We are in flu shot season. Every time I'm at the grocery store, you know, I think, oh, I should get my flu shot while I'm here. As I've said many times, come for the coleslaw, stay for the flu shot. I mean, are we dead into the season now where people should be considering and doing this?
I do think it's that time. It typically takes about 2 weeks for the flu shot to be effective. And so if you are somebody that's going to be around people at all this cold and flu season, now is about the time that I recommend getting it, because I think about it before we're getting into October. So we are right at that time. My family has already gotten their flu shots. I'm absolutely encouraging it for all of my patients. I really just want to prevent the bad flus that we can see, particularly when you're not vaccinated.
So what should we be doing right now? We talk about probably vaccinations more often than any other topic on this segment every week. But it's what we get the most questions about every week as well. Should I be, you know, doing this? Should I be taking that? I had my COVID shot at such and such a date. When am I due for that? So right now, if someone wants to be up to date on their vaccinations, flu shot would be on that list. What else?
COVID shot is also on that list. There's a new one for this season, and so I would recommend that, obviously, in consultation with your physician. And then depending on your age, some people, we recommend the RSV vaccine if they haven't gotten it. And then people over 50, we also recommend the pneumonia vaccine.
Okay. All right.
So there's a fair number.
Is there a way to get these vaccines without having your arm sore afterwards? Honestly,
I wish. I don't
that's
know
been,
about that one.
That's been, I haven't gotten my flu shot yet, because I was like, ooh, I don't want my arm to be sore.
Yes, I'm of the belief that I'd rather get them all at the same time and be sore one day, but that's me.
And just get it all over with at one time?
Yep.
One arm?
That is my plan, yep.
You put it all in one arm, too? Because I thought, do I spread this out? Do I put some in one arm and one in the other?
Generally, my preference to do one arm so that I can use my writing hand without problems, but everybody is a little bit different.
Okay. All right. I'm still going to procrastinate while I'm going to buy my coleslaw. I'll tell you that right now. We'll be back with more with Dr. Santina Wheat, and let's get to some of your questions as well. You can text in 312-981-7200, or if you want to actually speak like a human being with your voice, 312-981-7200. Dean, I get both of my vaccinations in my dominant arm because I'm forced to use it. I always advise my patients to do the same thing when I was practicing as a nurse practitioner. If it's in your dominant arm and you're using that arm, does the soreness go away faster?
It depends on the person. Again, it might. It forces everything to move around. When that happens to me, I just become lazy then and then don't want to use my arm. So
yeah,
it's really up to you.
Yeah, I would be the same way. I'd have a full cast on if it was me. That's just me being a baby. Faye, you're on WGN with Dr. Wheat.
Yeah, hi. I'm adding to that, you're the texter who said, because I always used my non-dominant arm, my left arm, and then only recently did a nurse say, oh, no, you should do it in your dominant arm. Because, like she said, you know, it'll force you to use it. I sit at a computer all day, and it was life changing. I didn't feel any discomfort in that arm from then on. So for me, that worked. So
that's just great.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Just wanted to add that.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. The 248 area code says, is there still a COVID vaccine available that is not mRNA? First, you have to explain what that means, because I have no idea what mRNA is.
Right. So there were different types of vaccines that were being made when the COVID vaccine was developed. The ones that are available typically at the pharmacies were the type of mRNA. It's just sort of how it was developed. There were some people that were concerned about that technology. I do believe there are still COVID vaccines that are not mRNA vaccines. However, they're not quite as easy to find. And most of the health systems that I'm aware of are holding the mRNA ones, as well as the pharmacies.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's harder to find.
You know, whatever the topic on this segment, it all comes down to the vaccines. That's what people have so many questions about this. I'm sure you must see that in your clinic as well. Dr. Santina Wheat, always nice to talk to you. I hope you have a wonderful Sunday today. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Have a great week.
H1, you want to turn your baseball cap around? Let's talk sports with Jack.
If I had a baseball cap with me, I would do so.
Do you wear a cap, Schwani?
Well, once in a while.
I could see you with a cap.
Once in a while.
Yeah, I could see you with a...
I see you with a fedora.
Like Damon Runyon or something?
Yeah. One side up, one side down.
Give me the story, slugger.
So who's going to win today, Jack? It's the Bears and Las Vegas Raiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I like the Bears.
That's a surprise.
Yep.
I mean, who in Chicago doesn't pick the Bears every week?
Especially after last week, I know Jim's Mr. Negative when it comes to the Bears.
Jim's Mr. Reality when it comes to the Bears. The only one in the city.
Wait a minute. They had a fantastic week last week.
Okay.
Raiders defense isn't great. Bears defense isn't great. So it might be like last week. So
will the Caleb we'll
see what happens.
Was that just an anomaly that he had such a phenomenal week last week? Or do you think that that's something that can hold for the season now? Not four touchdowns.
Right.
Necessarily, but...
Well, they're going to make the Wiener Circle go out of business if that's the case.
Right. Yeah, I noticed the Wiener Circle did not renew their offer this week.
It's a pizza restaurant this week.
I did see that, yeah.
Oh, really?
Is it really?
Yeah.
How many does he have to throw?
It's four again.
Oh, that's become the new standard now. Mm-hmm.
I hope it's not an anomaly. I thought he made some good progress, but... he's got to keep stacking it. We saw the flashes last year, and it's another defense he could take advantage of, so you want him to do that. And they have an early bye week, so they don't play next week, so you want to go into that feeling good. But
at least 2-2.
Yahoo! Yeah. Yahoo!
OB was in a great mood last week.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh, they were like...
I didn't hear the post game last week, but I can only imagine what...
What Eli just played was what he ended the show with. I never heard him say that.
Yahoo!
Schwani, what's your take on this?
Oh, I think it's fine. Conclusively.
I think is it just a front? Schwani goes home and paints his chest in Bears colors and it's just locked in.
Thank you for that visual image. I'll never be able to get out of my mind. I've said a million times, like, I wish I had whatever that mechanism is in my brain to think of something.
What a great idea. How many minutes
like that
are in a day or in a year?
But the context in which this song is taken, the musical Rent coming out in the worst part of the AIDS crisis, and what it meant to, you know, these the people who were involved in the show. And the reason I played the song this morning is because the annual AIDS Walk was yesterday. AIDS Run and Walk was just outside of Soldier Field. Pretty much from the beginning, I've been the host of the opening ceremonies for the AIDS Run and Walk. And while the nature of the disease has changed now, there still is a great need for people who are HIV positive and living with AIDS. And that's what it was about. It was the 25th annual, but It seems like we started doing the AIDS Run and Walk before 25 years ago. I don't know. My record keeping not the greatest. But anyway, it was so great to see so many wonderful people. The Chicago Gay Men's Chorus came out. They performed that song live.
Oh, cool.
And it's still powerful and still incredibly moving to hear that song.
You know, the author of Rent died before it opened.
Not something.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Before its Broadway opening, he died. I think the day or two before. It was some crazy thing.
Oh, that was the sadness of this crisis, this health epidemic, which, you know, in many ways is still going on. There are drugs that can be taken now which control HIV and AIDS.
Not like the cocktail kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, even it's even beyond that. It's like one pill a day or something that people take. Not only make if you are HIV positive, it makes it undetectable, but there's also drugs that you can take that prevents you from spreading it. So
I've seen the commercials for those, right? Yeah, that the pill.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it's so, you know, the advances have been great, but there are still lots of challenges that people have who are living with HIV and AIDS. So thank you for everybody who came out yesterday.
Well, it's the stigma still. And there's young people that don't even realize how treacherous and devastating it was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's not their fault, but there needs to be a whole new, I think, a re-education system to show just how brutal that was.
It was.
And especially people, just watch the Milk movie, you know, with Sean Penn.
Yeah.
It gives you a nice little, you know, view into
an idea of what it is.
Yeah.
And there are other films that specifically deal with it that break my heart when I see it.
Oh, yeah. And The Band Played On was one. And,
Obviously
Philadelphia.
So anyway, it was a gorgeous morning yesterday at outside of Soldier Field.
Did you walk?
So many people came out. Teams, you notice I'm avoiding your question.
I know, I saw that. Well, but it's usual.
I was very, very busy with my opening song.
I had a whole speech to.
I had to concentrate on my witticisms that I was sharing.
I'd love to hear your AIDS puns. Wow.
So I had a busy day yesterday because not only I did that in the morning, and then in the evening yesterday, I hosted a screening of the movie The Princess Bride that featured a sit-down Q&A with the star of the movie, Cary Elwes, who was in town. We had the best time.
So they showed the film and then you...
They showed the film up on big screen. I don't think I've ever seen that movie on big screen.
No?
I've only
when it came
seen
out
it.
In the 80s, no?
I don't think I went to see it.
It was a flop.
Most people did not go
it was
to see
a
it.
Huge flop. Rob, they didn't think Rob Reiner would make another movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That thing totally, if not for Billy Crystal's, you know, little...
He's mostly dead.
Yeah. That's all people remembered. But it has become such a cult classic.
But there and there are some classic lines and scenes. The great Mandy Patinkin, Chicago's Mandy Patinkin, who I went to grade school with. I don't know.
You did?
We went to Edward Cole's school on the South Side together.
Did he yell at the teachers, too? Did he get along? Did he get along with the teachers?
For some reason, he used that same Spanish accent as a kid on the South Side. But anyway, I mean, Mandy Patinkin, Christopher Guest.
Oh, everybody.
Yeah. Robin Wright.
And Christopher Guest wasn't even well known at that time.
No, this was way before Best in Show,
right?
And Waiting for Guffman and all of his mockumentary movies.
Yeah,
weddings. Some really funny scenes in the movie, and it has become a cult classic, as Cary was saying on stage during the Q&A, because of home video, because of VHS. You know, it was like right around the time when VHS and Blockbuster and, you know, all those things were exploding, and people were catching up and learning about the film then. So I don't think I ever saw it on big screen. It's just great to see these old movies up on a big screen the way the directors, in this case, Rob Reiner, intended. And then Carrie and I came out on the stage.
Did a little soft shoe and then
went. We did a little putting on the Ritz. He told some behind the scenes stories about the making of this movie. What I found most interesting, I mean, he had a lot of interesting stories about working with Andre the Giant.
Oh, right. He's in that, too.
In the movie. He had a lot of stories about Billy Crystal and
Carol Kane was his wife.
Yeah. Told lots of stories. What I found most interesting and that I'd never heard before is that the studios did not want to finance this movie. They looked at it and said, no way, this is going to be a hit. They were right.
It was a huge flop.
Turns out it was a big flop, but at the box office originally. Yeah. So who financed this film to get it made? Norman Lear.
Well,
the great Norman Lear.
Makes sense because he had the connection with Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner was like a second father to him.
All in the Family.
From All in the Family. Norman Lear, one of Rob Reiner's father's best friends.
And he had more money than God.
And he put up the money for this.
Wow.
And now it's, one of these movies. Yeah. The auditorium was packed last night. The auditorium theater.
That's at least 3,000-4,000.
With people who came to see this movie and came to see Cary Elwes.
Isn't that wild?
Who could not be nicer, by the way. Mm. Could not be more. My first time meeting him. Very, very pleasant.
Did you do any kind of a sword duel with him? You didn't bring out your saber?
I didn't think of that. I should have.
Right.
I should have showed up in tights and a mask.
You should have, got a duel with him. What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, mostly I
imitated. Challenge him to a duel.
I imitated his mostly dead scenes. Yeah. Just sitting
But
there.
There's so many movies in the 80s, I'm finding, that were complete flops at the box office. Total flops in the 80s, which have now become cult classics. And I think it's because the people now that are in their late 40s or early 50s, or even mid 30s, they were little kids.
Yeah.
And while these films may not have appealed to adults and they got bad reviews and then no one went to see them in big numbers, if you were 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, in the 80s, you didn't have your cell phone. You went to the movies.
Yeah.
And so you grew, those were your cool, like The Goonies, there's another movie.
Yeah.
Complete flop. People thought Steven Spielberg again was never going to make another movie again. That thing, if you talk to anybody, I mean, basically Stranger Things, the HBO, that's basically an updated Goonies.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's everybody talks about The Goonies like it is a coming, like it's their Stand By Me.
Well, and it speaks to what Cary Elwes was talking about last night. And then along comes VHS and Beta.
Yeah.
And the choices,
and cable too,
the choices became much greater. Who doesn't remember going to the Blockbuster or your neighborhood, whatever your neighborhood.
I still have that purple card.
Okay, that's weird that you still have them.
Well, it's still just in one of my old wallets.
He's got it right next to his Marshall Fields credit card, right. Carson Perry Scott cards.
It was actually blue. It wasn't purple. But
but who doesn't remember going to the video store and you hoped, you would go looking for a certain movie and you hoped that there would be one copy left. By the time you got there, it never was.
You had to go there on Friday early because if you waited till Saturday, the new releases were gone.
Too late. You wound up with who knows what.
Yeah, right,
but a lot of times, that's where you found some cool things that you went in looking for one thing when Harry Met Sally,
have it. So then you were forced,
and then you were forced to to watch something else. The home video experience. Is where people discovered The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
It's a funny movie. In kind of rewatching it. And partially it was because it was up on big screen.
Yeah.
There's just something special about watching old movies on big screen. I used to go back in the day, a long time ago, to the Music Box.
We lived there.
To see these old, great old black and white 1940s movies.
Because they had they used to have that free handout with every day was a different movie.
It was a different movie all the time.
Yeah.
I saw so many of them there, but I clearly remember Sunset Boulevard on big screen. That is phenomenal.
I saw Casablanca there.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Because I never saw it on a big screen. Yeah.
Yeah, those are...
Now, did the people at the auditorium, was it almost like a Rocky Horror Picture Show? Were they reacting at all to...
They were laughing.
But it wasn't like they were talking back or...
Well, in some cases where there are some classic lines.
Yeah.
People were shouting them
okay,
out.
Okay, see, yeah.
People were shouting out, he's mostly dead.
Right.
People would shout that out.
Yeah,
You know, but it was, it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
How long did he talk?
About an hour. Oh. A little over an hour.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
He's in a classic Seinfeld episode, too.
He was in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Right.
Yeah. Mel Brooks movie. He's working on I guess you would call it a prequel to Young Frankenstein.
Really?
Very Young Frankenstein. Oh. That's going to be streaming. I forget what platform he said. He's just now working on it with Mel Brooks. He talked about
who's 99.
Who is 99 years old and is as active as ever.
He's doing Spaceballs.
And he's doing Spaceballs. They just released some some photographs.
The table read.
Rick Moranis has agreed to come back.
Right.
There is no Spaceballs without Rick Moranis.
His dark helmet. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And Mel Brooks is going to be as Yogurt.
Yogurt. May the Schwartz be with you. 99.
Yeah.
And still, I mean, he is as sharp as a tack. It's unbelievable.
Well,
you did one of those things with him.
With what?
With Mel Brooks. Because I remember seeing him here at the Chicago Theater.
Young Frankenstein.
Yeah. They did the
Young Frankenstein. We showed Young Frankenstein. Yeah. First time I had ever seen that on big screen.
Oh, you didn't see it when it came out?
I don't think so.
Oh, I did.
If I do, I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's one of the funniest, might be the funniest movie of all time. And I'm backstage with Mel Brooks, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And we come out, same thing. I introduce him. I ask one question, and he talked the whole time.
I totally remember.
He did not stop for the whole
time.
And
he was hilarious.
And he was absolutely hilarious.
I mean, the people loved it. I mean, I cried when I saw him. Just to be in the room with him, I just love Mel Brooks. Always have.
Did I ever tell you when the Producers, the musical version of the Producers, came out and did its pre-Broadway run
here
in Chicago with Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick, and we interviewed the cast and Mel Brooks beforehand, and then went to the opening and saw the movie. I saw the play, and it was hilarious. And I was lucky enough to be invited to the cast party after opening night.
They must have been on cloud nine.
And Mel Brooks was there, and Anne Bancroft was there.
Wow.
Nathan Lane, Matthew Broderick, Sarah Jessica Parker.
It's like a Broadway, who's who,
star study.
Yeah.
And everybody was very nice. And I go up to Mel Brooks and, congratulations, hilariously funny. He goes, oh, thank you. And he takes both of his hands on my cheeks and he's slapping my cheeks. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. He is slapping the snot out of me.
You didn't wash your face, have you?
I hope not. Not since then.
I hope not.
Yeah, a little disgusting now, but still worth it, though.
WGN. And here at the Wynn, the classic play and film about the infamous Scopes Monkey Trial. It's going to be at the Edge of the Wood Theater, which is in the Edgebrook Saugnash area, near Toohey and Caldwell. The theater itself has been around. It's actually a teaching theater school, and the theater then itself is about 12 years. But 25 years ago is when the teaching school started. They are of a Jeff nominated group, so I'm very excited. This is my first play with them, and as I said to you earlier, I'm playing the role of Drummond, that was based on the Clarence Darrow character
that Spencer Tracy played.
Spencer Tracy, and was nominated for an Academy Award. He didn't win either, Dean.
Yeah, well.
But and then
he was going out with Catherine Hepburn. He didn't need to win any.
Hello, Spencer.
That was all the award that he needed.
Yeah, no kidding. But so very excited. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. So this is really one of my dream roles. I'm so excited to be able to play this role because it's the Scopes Monkey trial was about a law that was passed in real life. Law that was passed in Tennessee in 1925 or so, that banned the teaching of any kind of creation story except the Bible creation story. Yeah. So at this time, of course, Darwin's theory of evolution was beginning to really take hold. It was back in the late 1800s. Now it's 1925. And so it was basically a battle between fundamentalism and modernism. And so Darrow comes from Chicago after just getting the two Leopold and Loeb murderers off. He comes with a huge reputation, and he is up against a very well-known politician at the time in real life called William Jennings Bryan, who was a three-time presidential nominee. He never won, Dean.
You're in good company.
Yes, obviously. But very well-known, a big orator, a very big. And so there's this clash of these two legal titans, Bryan on one side, Darrow on the other. Bryan for fundamentalist religion, talking about the Bible is literal. And, of course, Darrow is fighting for the evolution and talking about the freedom to think and just come up with different ideas.
So when will this?
Yeah, so it runs November 7th through the 23rd at the Edge of the Wood Theater. And you can go for tickets at edgeofthewood.com. It's directed by Chris Toft, and Scott Purdy is playing Brady, and I am playing Drummond. I'm just very excited, so hopefully everybody wants to come out.
Yeah, it sounds like
it was at the Goodman last year, if you remember.
Great, I do remember.
Henry Lennox from Blacklist played Drummond.
It sounds like it's going to be a great production. We'll look forward to it.
Yeah, thank you.
I am still riding high on seeing Come From Away. Have you ever seen... it's been in
I haven't seen it. Everybody raves about this show.
It is a multi Tony nominated
production. Oh, it didn't win, Dean?
Production. But it is such a moving, powerful story of what happened the day after September 11th, 2001. Remember when all the planes were grounded and it was eerily quiet?
It was so weird.
Everywhere. It was so weird, but many of those planes were diverted to a small town in Canada. The story of like 6,000 people who suddenly had to live in this small town in Canada, and the story of the generosity and the caring of the residents of this small town, the story of surviving, because really for quite a long time, nobody even knew what happened in New York and in Pennsylvania with the attacks on 9/11.
And Washington, too. Don't
and Washington at the Pentagon as well. Exactly right. The story is very moving. It kind of breaks your heart because it brings back all the 9/11 memories and the fears that we all had at the time, but mostly shows you a world in which people cared about each other. And I'm sorry, we're not living in that world right now. It's a complete.
It was one of the last times that we were truly united.
When we were an actual United States of America.
And that was 25 years ago.
That was 24 years ago. Yeah, exactly right. Our weekend theater segment this week brought to you by lyricoperaofchicago.org. A real pleasure to welcome to the show. And by the way, I mentioned it a few minutes ago. I love this production. I've seen this maybe four times, the show. By far the best production of Come From Away that I've seen. And it's out at the Paramount in Aurora. Trent Stork is the director of the show. And Russell Constance plays the mayor of this small town, Gander, Newfoundland. They both join us on the phone line right now. Guys, welcome to WGN. Hello.
Good morning. Hello there. It's good to hear you.
Yeah. It's great to have you guys with us. Trent, let me start off with you. Talk to me a little bit about putting this story together. I mean, It's a musical that's been around for a while. You and this cast have added some kind of magic to it to just make it come alive in a way that I've never seen before. Talk to me a little bit about the making of Come From Away.
Yeah, I mean, I think for any director of theater shows, it's kind of a dream show because it's mostly theater at its finest, right? You get a company of really fine actors, you put them together, and we tell a story with 12 chairs and two tables, and we just kind of suggest locations. So, you know, starting from the roots of how the show was made and keeping that true to it, you know, true to the identity of the show. But then, you know, adding those things that can really make the heartstrings kind of pluck for a giant audience, you know, our house being nearly 2,000 seats, you know, finding ways to make sure that these moments of stillness or these moments of reflection, how can we viscerally create those moments and make them really touch nearly 2,000 people every night? That was kind of the my into the show. And also, you know, a lot of my family is from northern Minnesota. And so the ilk of the people of Gander felt very much like my family. And so I thought it was so funny how in the script they talk about the weather all the time, right? They talk about how they, you know, their whole day is defined by the weather. One of the first things they say is, oh, it was a gorgeous day on this day. And I went through my script and I started highlighting all the times that they were talking about the weather. And so that became also one of the ints of the show is like, how could we maybe visually represent the weather element in the show?
Yeah, you're probably because their dialogue coach also if you have a family. Right?
I know. Well, it's funny because like my aunt's last name is Mosier, and we have Janice Mosier in the show. I was like, oh, I know the Mosiers. I know these people.
Yeah, Russell, talk to me a little bit about being part of this production that is, I left, you know, it's a sad topic, you know, to remember 9/11 and the fear that we all felt. But you wind up leaving the theater feeling very uplifted after you watch this.
Yeah, again, just what you mentioned earlier, Dean, that the story is amazing. This true story of these people's generosity. And so, yeah, it is a very difficult subject to try and address. Yet when you look at it, at what happened in this little town, you can't help but go away going, holy cow, there's hope for humanity. People in general, I do think, you know, people are generally good, despite our differences, that when faced with adversity or tragedy or someone in front of you that needs help, you're probably going to step forward and help. But, you know, one of the things I've pondered as we worked on this, is I don't know if the creators of the play understood when they wrote it. They may have, they may not have, but when you put only 12 people on that stage to play 50 or 60 characters, we became that community of giving because you might have, oh my God, I've got a coat and a beer bottle and a hat on and I got to get rid of it and this chair has to move and then I have to be over there 10 steps away in 3 seconds and be someone else.
Yeah.
And the whole cast just goes, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do... And everybody was just giving and just making the show the priority. And we became that of, I can help here, I can help here. It's just been an amazing journey. Just wonderful.
Yeah, I guess that's part of... Also part of the reason why I enjoyed this so much is that it was very engaging. The sets... The production, you know, the actual putting on of the show and the moving of the chairs engages the audience to now you believe you're in a bar. Now you believe you're in a plane. Now you believe, you know, with some very simple movements. And as you say, the change of a baseball cap, Russell, you actually have a few hat changes in the show yourself as the mayor of Gander, and some other roles in it as well. You get very engaged in the storyline of the show as an audience member.
Yeah, and I want to address too when you mentioned the sadness of the event. I think a big credit of why you walk away feeling happier.
It's a tough subject to talk about. And of course, all of our minds go back to where we were that morning or that, you know, that entire day.
Yep.
And sometimes at rehearsal, we get really choked up. And even in a performance, like maybe at a preview where my mind would go there and I could, you know, have to choke out some words. And Trent, as our director, would just say, we can't have tears here. You're strong. You can't, you know, and so it kept, and it really was what those people in Gander had to do. We had to put our feelings aside to focus on the people that needed the help. And so I thought, I really attribute a lot of that feel to Trent and how they approached the show of, we're not telling a sad story. We're telling a great, wonderful giving story.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the magic and the power of the show. You know, you say to yourself, why would I want to go see a play that's going to make me sad? This play is not going to make you sad. It's going to make you feel good about the human spirit, about who we are as human beings. Come From Away at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. We'll talk more with Trent Stork and Rushel Constance when we come right back. The production, Come From Away. I am highly, highly, highly recommending you go check this out while it's at the Paramount Theater, downtown Aurora, now through October the 12th. Rushel Constance plays the mayor of Gander, the small town where planes were diverted after September 11th, 2001 happened, and how this small town reacted to suddenly having to accommodate like 6,000 people. Trent Stork is their director. And I have to ask you, Rushel, about how you got involved in the show, because I know that you were acting and then you got out of the acting business for about 20 years. You became a school teacher in Byron, Illinois, but you couldn't keep you away for very long, though, could you? Could they?
No, it was kind of always the plan. I had 15 or so years up in Minneapolis. That's where I went after college. I was a graduate from Illinois Wesleyan University. Ended up in Minneapolis and had a career there. And then my wife and I chose to move down here. And I did a little bit of work out at Drury Lane, Oak Brook, and realized the theater scene here was really different. In Minneapolis, a show might run 1 or 2 years. And down here, my first show, Drury Lane, they said, my castmates in my dressing room said, it's great to have such a long contract. And it was 3 months. And I kind of went, oh, well, I live in Rochelle. I'm not going to be driving into Chicago. You know, it's a numbers game with theater bookings. You know, you audition, you maybe get 1 out of 20 or whatever. And I thought, I can't keep doing this. So I went back to school, got my teacher's license. Never thought I would do middle school, but that's, I first taught at a K-8 school and then, I'm sorry, at a 6-12 school and then at a K-8 school. And in both places, I really liked those middle schoolers. So I ended up at Byron Middle School. I was there 17 years and 3 years up in Rockford, so 20 years. But the plan was always, when I hit retirement, I'm coming back to do what I'm supposed to do. And wasn't going to audition till this coming November or December. Just plan was my wife and I put the house for sale. We're moving, and I thought it's too much. But then my wife saw an audition notice for this back in February, and I went, oh, my God, I'm built for this show. I have to go to the audition. Didn't really expect to get much because I, you know, I'm new to the scene. Nobody knows me. And thankfully, Paramount is one of the theaters that takes a look at people at the big EPA auditions for Equity. And, you know, I just, my head was spinning forever. It still is. I just feel like I'm the luckiest guy on earth.
Yeah. Well, you knock it out of the park, as does the rest of this cast. Everybody has been raving about this show, including some of the people who are actually, you know, the real people who were in Gander have come and seen the production and agree with what I've been saying, that this is an amazing production. Come From Away, Paramount Theater in Aurora. It's playing now through October the 12th. Do yourself a favor and go and see an amazing production. Rushel, thank you so much for joining us. Trent, thank you very much for this wonderful production. You are to be applauded. I really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Dean. Thank you. Thank you, Dean. I also would like to shout out for all the designers and our crew. They're amazing. Everybody at Paramount is just wonderful and great at their jobs.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Thanks, guys. Another horrific shooting.
Yes. The police say the shooter is down and that there's no ongoing threat to the public. However, again, a number of people were shot in this incident. We don't know how many. We don't know the extent of the injuries. And the fact that the church is on fire is...
What is that?
Yeah.
That's a whole new wrinkle.
And it's not known why or how that got started, but a lot of questions here.
Yeah, a television station in Detroit, Fox 2, is reporting between 6 and 8 victims of the shooting that's taken place this morning.
Mm.
So, all right. When you get more information, please let us know.
Will do. Yeah.
Yeah. Break right in. Thank you for that. It is 11:09. This awful shooting has taken place at a Mormon church in Michigan. We don't know why. We don't know exactly. You know, we have extremely sketchy details on it right now. The church itself is on fire. Right
yes.
now, right?
Yes, the church is on fire. And again, the question is how that happened. Was this directly connected with the shootings that were taking place? And we got late word that we will have a briefing from authorities here. You know, when exactly, it's unclear, but we should be hearing from authorities here, you know, in the next hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, obviously, their local officials there are telling residents to avoid the area. They are not releasing the conditions of victims at this point. And as Shwani said, they're going to be releasing more information. I mean, it's a horrible story, but. Is anybody else feeling just completely worn out?
How much of this can keep going on every week now?
Right? I mean, that's...
I mean, the Charlie Kirk thing, and then there was one after that. And
the shootings at the detention center in Texas.
Yeah. And now this.
I'm worn out. I'm just... it like, saddens me to my core, and it just wears me out that... This is what the world has
become. This is today. This is it.
This is what the world is now.
I don't even know if our enemies need to worry about all their nuclear weapons. They should just let us be, and we're going to just implode from within.
Yeah.
Because when is it, everybody's calling for stopping the rhetoric, stopping the shit, but nothing, the next thing is going to be another vigil again, right? I mean, what do we do?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, we don't want to speculate on what has happened this morning. You know, reasons, who did it, you know, all those things we will learn in time once everything is released. But Shwani, you did say in the story that the shooter apparently is down. Though,
yes,
right?
The police have said the shooter is down. Yeah. There's no ongoing threat. Right. But again, a number of people shot at the church, which is now on fire. This is in Grand Blanc, Michigan, north of Detroit. Here's an ironic, you might say ironic, a connection here. This shooting occurring at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints the morning after Russell Nelson, the oldest ever president of the church, died this weekend at the age of 101.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I did hear that story earlier this week. I don't know. I mean, I've heard so many interviews about why people commit these horrific acts, no matter who it is against, whether it's a school shooting, whether it's a shooting of a political figure with whom you disagree, or, you know, whatever it is, the mindset, the sickness in somebody's head to commit an act like this, to go to a house of worship where people went on a Sunday morning to worship God, and somebody shows up with a gun and shoots the place up.
Well, what about Highland Park?
Same.
There's people there to people celebrate a holiday with their kids.
A parade. I mean, that's what I mean. I'm worn out. I mean,
yeah.
Are we going to get to a point where we're just numb to all these horrific things that are happening that we don't even pay attention to it? It's like, oh, another shooting took place. Yeah. You know, what else is going on?
And you can't even, like I said, just naming them, it's even hard to even remember.
Yeah.
Because it's commonplace, sadly, now.
Yeah. Somebody on the text line says the shooting's happening because all the media does is sensationalize it. I have to disagree with that. We report what's going on. We report what's going on. You want to censor the news? You don't want to know what's going on? I'm not even going to bring Schwani into this. Not for any, you know. You report the news. That's your job, to report the news.
We've been giving the facts
and things.
That's all.
Exactly. And to say that is sensationalizing or in some way glamorizing a horrific event. This is somebody's mental illness that we're talking about. Somebody who would shoot up a church. Somebody who would go to a political rally and shoot somebody. Because they, I don't even know why. I mean, I haven't.
But to your point, reporting the facts, like Schwani said, that's not sensationalizing it. And even if you do have to ultimately say the name of the shooter, sadly, that is a part of the story that needs to be revealed.
Well, it's part of the
story. Along with any motive.
It's definitely part of the story. Anyway, let's put this on the burner until Schwani learns more information. You said they're going to have
we'll have a briefing at some point here. Not sure when, but the authorities there that say that they'll be ready to brief here as time goes on. But given the fact that there's a active fire at that church right now, you know, they're, you know, the first responders are concentrating on that and determining the condition of these victims.
Yeah. Let's wait and get the information before, you know, we speculate. Very interestingly, this world that we live in right now, this news story just broke. There is virtually no information about who or what or why. Already on our text line, some people are blaming the left, some people are blaming the right. There is no information, but that's where we go right now with anything. Blame the other side, no matter. Both sides do it.
Everybody does it.
Both sides do it. No, I'm seeing it on our text line.
Nobody's
immune. Both sides are doing it. Why don't you wait to get some facts before you start pointing the finger at people? What kind of world are we living in? That's the part that's wearing me out right now. All right.
Knee-jerk. We're in a knee-jerk reaction culture right now.
Yeah.
And everybody has to comment on everything and have an opinion. I mean,
Well,
damn phones. In my day.
You know what? I do blame.
Of course.
I do blame social media for a lot of this.
Of course you do. There's no question about that. Where do you think it is?
We have way too much information.
When we got that thing in our pockets,
right. That
was the end of it.
At least you waited like 10 or 12 years before you got a phone.
Right, exactly. But look at me.
You stayed with your flip phone.
I had my flip phone for a while, but now you can't even. Now you go anywhere, and there is already an expectation. Like, well, just use the QR, whatever that. What is that
QR code?
I don't even know that. Use the QR. There's no like. Do you have? It's like, oh, just hit that. Do that. I can't. You can't go to a concert without a phone.
Yeah.
There's no more paper tickets.
Yeah, you're right.
That's why I had to get it. You can't exist in the world. But in my day, we didn't have any social media. We didn't know anything. We didn't think anything, and we liked it.
All right. Settle down. Get back on your streetcar and go back to wherever you came. WGN. We're going to continue with some of our regular things that we do here on Sunday morning, and that includes our A-list interviews with the stars. The reason that I wasn't here last week is because I was in California interviewing maybe one of the biggest movie stars in the world. Leonardo DiCaprio has a brand new movie. Leo, as I like to
Leo.
Call.
Lee.
I'm way too busy to say the full name Leonardo.
It's too many syllables.
So I just got to say
it's too many syllables.
Leo. Talked with Leonardo DiCaprio, talked with Benicio del Toro, talked with Regina Hall, one of my favorite actors, Tiana Taylor, and a 21-year-old actress. Get this for a story. She is a graduate of Columbia College in Chicago.
Your alma mater.
That's where I went to school, and I pointed that out to her that she's 21 years old and already 1,000 times more successful than I will ever be if I live to
she's
be.
She's already the most famous Columbia College alumna.
She's going to be. She's going to be. Now that this new movie is out, one battle after another, it's a stunning.
Yeah, I keep reading about movie. It, but what is it? What's it about?
It's about, it's basically a father-daughter story, which... If Quentin Tarantino was going to tell a story, a father-daughter story about the father is an ex-revolutionary who has a daughter, raises the daughter by himself, kind of goes off the grid, gets away from the revolution, and is raising the daughter. But the daughter is kidnapped by the government. Because of the revolutionary ties. I don't want to give away the reason why, but the daughter is kidnapped. So the father comes back off, back onto the grid to try to find his daughter. In the meantime, the government is also trying to get the daughter. The government, represented by Sean Penn, you may as well give him the Academy Award right now. It's the most bizarre characterization that Sean Penn has ever done. It's an amazing character. His performance is amazing.
Because they're talking about Leonardo, too, as being
Leonardo
nominated.
Is pretty great in this movie. But this young actress that I'm talking about, her name is Chase Infinity. Originally from Indianapolis, came to Chicago to go to Columbia College, finished there, and she gets her first ever movie role is co-starring with Leonardo DiCaprio
and Sean Penn. Not bad.
And all the rest. And she is really great. I can see how she got picked. She's great. I sat down and talked with all of them last week, and we'll share those interviews coming up in just a little while. Now, everyone is not going to be happy with this movie. I gave it Dean's List A+.
Oof.
That's how much I like this
movie. And you don't do that very often.
I don't do that very often, but this is an amazingly made movie. The director is Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, wow.
Who makes amazing films. It is remarkable filmmaking. It's a remarkable story. It's remarkable performances. But, you know, part of the storyline is the detention of immigrants. So there are some political parts of this that people already are saying they don't like the movie because it's taking political sides. It's a movie. It's going to take sides. You don't have to agree with everything that's happening, but it is a part of the storyline. Anyway, we'll share those interviews coming up in just a few minutes. And we will get the latest news from Dave Schwann. I remember as a kid going to movie theaters and... Like the old movie palaces.
Definitely.
They had balconies.
Balconies, definitely. I mean, I always, sometimes you'd sit in the balcony, especially if you went there with a girl, you sit in the corner.
Yeah. Well,
remember the good old double feature?
Oh, yeah.
At least you got to see one movie.
You got to see. What are you, Rico Suave?
Well, you know, go to double feature. You, the bad movie, you know, you do your stuff, and then the good one, you go, okay, now let's watch the movie.
I was too dorky to have that.
Did you ever bring food
Of course.
Mom, she used to bring like sub sale. I mean, it used to smell like a deli.
I want to say when we would go to movies as a family, which we did. Yeah. We used to go to the old Avalon Theater on the south side on 79th near Stony Island. I think you went to like the north side.
The Will Rogers on Belmont and Central.
Yeah, there's still some great theaters.
There was the Luna was on Belmont and Central.
On the south side, we used to go to the Avalon was the big one. The Hamilton Theater, the Shelton, these are the ones that we went to all the time. As a family, we were four boys and parents. I want to say that my mom would make fried chicken.
That's what I mean.
And put it in a paper bag.
Not even in a Tupperware.
No, in a paper bag.
It's all greasy.
And you'd sit there and eat a chicken leg.
Exactly.
While the Pink Panther cartoon.
And you'd hear you'd hear the tin foil or the cellophane unwrapping.
We weren't the only ones.
Passing it down the row. Here, give that to Tommy.
My mom would make a big thing of popcorn at home.
You couldn't even buy popcorn there?
Each kid would get a small bag of popcorn.
Wow.
And it's like, I want milk duds. Right. All the other kids have milk duds. If all the other kids jumped off the side of a building, would you?
Well, maybe. Well,
I sort of want to right now. It's like, I couldn't wait till I got my own money
to do that. But it smelled like a deli.
That's how it was back then.
And now I don't even think they let you bring in your own contraband, right? I mean,
they don't. What they don't know won't hurt.
Dean's still over there with his little bag of popcorn.
When they bring in my fried chicken,
it's like, what does it smell like? Browns in here.
I always stop at KFC before I go to a theater. What was I saying here? Oh, the movies.
The movies. Did you ever go to movies?
Well, I was talking about the balcony.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what it was. Yeah. But I was going to... Oh, I know what I wanted to bring up. That this is a kind of a big anniversary today. It was on this day in 1949 that the movie My Friend Irma opened up. Do you know that movie, My Friend
Irma? Yes, I've heard of that. Why is that significant?
It was the first movie that Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis made together.
That's right.
It was the first of 16 movies that Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis made.
Google Martin and Lewis, by the way.
Who's Dean Martin's Uncle Dean? Who's Jerry Lewis?
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. My Friend. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember that movie in particular. I know they did many movies together. Yeah. I'm sure I've seen half a dozen of them or so. But mostly I remember the Jerry Lewis movies.
Right. Oh, gosh.
The Nutty Professor.
Everybody talks about but those Jerry Lewis movies were very inventive.
Absolutely.
I was clicking by the other day, and the Patsy was on.
Oh, yeah.
And this was pure Charlie Chaplin. 10 minutes. He had a white outfit on, and he needed to go to some formal affair. No words, just music. He took black paint, painted his suit, cut the things, and he made a tuxedo out of stuff sitting around backstage at a thing, and he walked out. And no words, just complete. I was like, this is Chaplin.
Yeah.
It was, what the hell are you talking about?
I had many encounters with Jerry Lewis. Many encounters. I interviewed
him. Did you?
Several times.
Oh.
Each one more unpleasant than the next. I said this when he was
alive. He was not a happy man.
It's not like I
said
something.
And you did the telethon.
And I did the telethon.
You did the MDA telethon, the Jerry Lewis.
Over 30 years.
Yeah, and you did not have a good encounter.
He was not a pleasant person to be around in person.
Wow.
He was not. But
he was a genius, though. He's a
talented
genius.
As all get out.
Yeah.
Talented, hilarious.
Yeah. You cannot deny that.
Really, as a talent, nobody much better. But oh man, what a handful he was.
Even though you were donating your time.
It wasn't related. My time with him was not related to the time.
Oh, I see. Oh, I thought it was something.
It was when he was doing appearances.
Oh, okay.
Things like that. Never mind. I don't want to get off on that side.
You're not speaking to Jerry Lewis, I take it.
Well, he's passed away now, so we haven't really had any conversations lately.
That's why they've all been pleasant. It's a one way.
But his movies are genius.
They are.
He was hilarious with Dean Martin. Dean Martin is the, you know, the suave sort of sex symbol of the
straight man.
Famous duo.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lewis as the complete, you know, clown, absolute hilarious complete clown. Then they split up. Jerry Lewis does his own movies. Dean Martin does his TV show. They both have success. And then Frank Sinatra brings them back together again.
On the telethon.
On the telethon. I want to say in the late 70s or something.
Yeah, I think like it was like 76.
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, so it's a Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis anniversary today.
I have, my mom and dad went to Dino's Lodge.
Oh, my.
In California. Long before I was born, and I have my mom, the five-finger discount, my mom took one of the Dino's Lodge ashtrays.
Yeah, of course.
And I've got the caricature of Dean in that ashtray. It's on the bar in my house.
Wow.
It is one of my most prized possessions.
I'll bet.
It is the coolest thing.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's this caricature of Dean, which was like on the outside sign. In fact, for you Andy Griffith fans, if you ever see the episode when Andy and Aunt Bea and Opie go to Hollywood, you will see them take the bus ride, and they pass Dino's Lodge because it was open at the time.
No kidding.
And they drive right past it. Wow. And I'm like, hey, I've got, because there's the caricature I've got on my ashtray.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, nice that your mother was a kleptomaniac.
Well, no, she knew what she was doing. She wasn't a kleptomaniac. She was like, hey, this is cool.
This is a...
For all I know, you could buy them there. I don't know. Yeah. Let's give her the benefit of the doubt.
All my mother ever stole was thousands of packets of Splenda. From any restaurant.
Domino's sugar.
We went to a restaurant once, and we had a nice dinner, and you know, the waiter clears the table, and she starts clearing
the rolls, the butter.
She took all the Splenda, everything. I grabbed her wrist at one time, and I said, stop taking stuff.
When my mom, the last 3 years of her life, my mom lived with us, when we would go out, when we come home, I had to take her purse and dump it over because there were so many crumbs from the rolls, the butter, everything. I'd go, okay, what did you take today? I mean, it was a normal type of thing.
After my mom passed away, you know, we're cleaning out her place. That's when the real payload showed up.
Oh, then you find, they can't hide it anymore.
How did Splenda ever stay in business? This woman stole every Splenda packet that she ever encountered.
You know, they came from the Depression era.
That's right.
And they were afraid, and they hoarded, and because they didn't know what tomorrow would bring.
I know exactly what she would say. Why should I spend money for this?
Definitely.
It's right here on the table. They leave it for you to take it.
Yeah.
But
they leave it for you to take it.
And apparently the breadsticks.
Oh,
the butter pads.
Oh, the butter pads. Yeah, remember those butter pads that had like the cellophane on the top that you peeled away? Yeah. So in the purse, they were all greasy because if it got warm, then they melted.
Melted, right.
Yeah, it was a carnival in that purse.
People wonder why we are the way we are today. It's no joke. So last weekend I was in Los Angeles, had the pleasure of getting a first look at Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, director Paul Thomas Anderson's latest movie called One Battle After Another. I loved it. It is hard R-rated. This is not a movie for everyone, but it's a powerful story, an action movie. It's a comedy. It's one that will make you stop and think of politics in the world today. It's got lots of things going on in the film. We had the opportunity to sit and talk with its stars, Benicio del Toro, and both of them Oscar winners. Oscar winner Benicio del Toro and also Leonardo DiCaprio. We'll get to that coming up next. WGN.
Smooth
Thanks
jazz.
For bringing back that nightmare period.
Well, you bring up CFL, I might as well get the Holy Trinity in there.
I went through electroshock therapy to forget those 3 years. Time for our Dean's List A-List interview with the stars, and they do not get much bigger than Leonardo DiCaprio. I've talked with him several times over the years.
Does he remember you when you come in?
I don't know.
No.
I don't know if they do or not.
I mean, you've...
They all pretend like they do.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Well, they're actors.
And then I go, they yeah. are actors. Yeah, after all, they're yeah. that's their job to do that. I think, you know, I've been doing it for
Well, I'm saying you've done it long enough that you've got to be at least recognizable.
I think mostly
facially.
They remember the bald guy from Chicago's back. I think that's how they know me.
Hey.
I'll take it.
It's better than not being known, right?
They think Tom Skilling's coming to interview
yeah.
them. They don't know.
Yeah, Leo.
Interviewed him several times, and also Benicio del Toro. Also, both Oscar winners, both incredible actors, and both starring in this new film, One Battle After Another, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson.
He did like Boogie Nights and There Will Be Blood.
Oh, some just
Magnolia.
Absolutely amazing and challenging films. And this one, I guarantee you, is going to be nominated for Best Picture. DiCaprio is going to be nominated, no question. Sean Penn, you may as well just give him the statue right now. I can't imagine anybody turning in a more provocative performance than Sean Penn does in this movie as this ultra macho military man.
That would be his third if he does
in this film. Also Regina Hall stars in the film, Tiana Taylor, this young actress I mentioned who is from Columbia College. Her name is Chase Infinity. She will definitely be nominated for Best Actress, in my opinion. There are just one great performance after another. It's a 3-hour-long film, which normally is my pet peeve. I don't like, but this movie just flies by these 3 hours. It's very violent. It's very edgy, raw, lots of bad language in it. So, you know, I don't know. It may be the kind of film that, you know, are attracted to. A lot of people, after I gave it a Dean's List A+, several people went to see it and said they couldn't disagree with me more. That's fine. Everybody has their own taste and their own opinions. But when I sat down with Del Toro and DiCaprio, I was clearly still buzzing from seeing the movie the night before. I barely could go to sleep last night after I saw this movie, reliving it and thinking about different parts, and that I hadn't seen a movie in such a long time that's so multifaceted and so interesting and so many great characters. And I kept coming back to the timeliness of this film and how obviously it was made a couple of years ago probably, but is so relevant to today. Was that part of the attraction for you in the script?
Well, I think the attraction for both of us was just to be able to work with Paul. I mean, he's such a visionary. He's a generational director, but I love being a part of movies that have just a tremendous amount of thought put into it, that are robust and multi-layered and have different character facets. And ironically, I think he's been thinking about this movie for 20 years now. And the fact that it's coming out in the day and age that it is, with the sort of political discourse, the idea of extremism on both ends, it's just ironic that it's landing at this spot. But at the heart of it, he deals with all these issues with a great amount of irony and satire, action, yeah. and comedy too. You know, Spielberg talked about relating it to Dr. Strangelove. That may or may not be the case, but you're able to laugh and go on a ride and a journey with these characters.
Yeah.
And at the heart of it is a sense of compassion that you have for yeah. another, and the ability for these characters to, you know, have a humanity for one another, yeah, which
and,
I love.
And empathy. I mean, your yeah. character is so flawed,
yeah,
but is so lovable and funny at the same time, both of you, really. Benicio, what's the PTA attraction for you?
Well, I mean, he is one of a kind, and I think he you know, we've been talking about him for quite a bit, but I think one thing he does have is this, he loves the process of the actor. He really includes the actor, even though he's a writer-director, he really includes the actor in taking control of your own character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about your question before, it's like when I was talking to him, when I read the script and I was talking to him, I asked him, when does this take place? And he goes, well, about maybe 10, 15 years from now. Took a year and we're in it. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's amazing.
Pretty much, yeah. It's amazing. He's that guy. He has a vision. He's phenomenal.
Yeah, sure yeah. is. I think the first movie that we talked was Gilbert Grape. It's been that long. Wow, I was just thinking about when was the first time I talked to you. And I was reflecting on your career. Do you do that, or is this just a continuous roller coaster ride for you? Do you look back nostalgic on early projects and things like that?
I definitely get nostalgic about early projects. It's always the first one, you know, the first one being immersed in, you know, coming from commercials, television, and then you get that role, right? And you're on set, and things, there's a whole different level of seriousness, yeah. quietness, concentration. And I got to do my first movie with Michael Caton Jones and Ellen Barkin and Robert De Niro in This Boy's Life. And just being able to watch Mr. De Niro on set and the focus that he had, his ability to improvise, be in the moment, I was like profoundly, profoundly affected by that. But as far as looking back on my whole career, no, I think it's something I rarely do. I think I may catch a movie of mine here or there, but I want to keep going, you know, and stuff evolves. But rather, it's always that first thing.
Backwards.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio, new movie is called One Battle After Another. All right, thank you very much. And you will keep us posted on any developments that may come out of this horrific story.
We should be hearing from authorities there very soon.
Out of the shooting of the Mormon church in Michigan, just north of Detroit, right?
North of it, about 50 miles, Grand Blanc, Michigan, which is more or less in between Detroit and Flint, Michigan, in that area there. Yeah, and the church remains on fire.
That's amazing. It's just amazing that another shooting has happened again. The police, I imagine the police and first responders are just, they're trying to, you know, make some sense out of all this and find out what's going on.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, this is not a big community and far enough away from Detroit where it would take, you know, extra reinforcements for them to get there. Yeah. It'll take a little while.
Yeah. We'll be hearing much more about it, I'm sure, as the day goes on. Our WGN news team will bring you updates throughout the afternoon on this awful event. And we'll continue with a little mini version of our Food Time show, a bite-sized version, if you will, coming up next. All right, we said we would update you when we learned more information about multiple people shot at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Michigan. Dave Schwann, what's the latest?
We do have an update now, Dean, from authorities at Grand Blanc, Michigan, north of Detroit. The Associated Press and authorities saying one person was killed, nine injured in a shooting at the Mormon church in Michigan. The shooter is down. This happened at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Grand Blanc, about 50 miles north of Detroit, and the building remains on fire. However, we don't have details on the conditions of the people that were injured. But again, police there saying one person killed, nine injured at this shooting this morning at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Grand Blanc.
All right, very good. We'll jump in as you need to when we get more information. I know the natural reaction, especially in the world that we live in today, is to point fingers and probably the correct thing to do is wait until we get some information, learn about what actually happened, and we should be learning that from officials through the afternoon. And our WGN newsroom will bring you the latest throughout the afternoon here, so stand by for that. It is 12:14, and this is Dean Richards. We've got Hampton OB coming up with our Bears pregame. Bears taking on the Las Vegas Raiders today. Andy Mazur, Hamp and OB all coming up in just a few minutes. So we've got a little mini version of our Food Time show for today. Here is what Robin Baumgarten from the WGN Morning News said of the dish that I made on my TV cooking segment this past Wednesday. Diener, she likes to call me Diener. Diener, that's the best thing you ever made.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you've been doing this since COVID. I mean, that's
3-4 years.
5 years now. Think about it.
Yeah, whatever.
Diener.
I think I've made better things.
Oh.
Myself.
Okay.
But she loved it that much. She went crazy over
what?
A French onion soup.
I didn't see you make it, but I heard you were teasing it.
French onion soup with gnocchi in it.
Oh,
instead of
the bread.
Instead, you put a big chunk of bread
inside
with cheese on top.
I love gnocchi. It's my favorite.
Gnocchi are like little pillows of deliciousness.
Of divinity.
It's basically French onion soup, French onion soup.
Right.
Because gnocchi really is just
potato.
It's been processed and formed into that way. But imagine.
Wow. Where did you come up with that?
I guess so.
Nice.
I guess so.
Look at you, like,
I was
making complex layers.
I wouldn't like it's that complex.
Yeah, but the idea, I never heard of Rick Bayless putting gnocchi in an onion soup. So look at you.
He's got a Mexican restaurant.
Well,
why would he? But,
no, that's a great idea.
Take your,
it's a starch?
I mean, a favorite French onion soup recipe, you know, whatever it is. And instead of putting a big hunk of bread in the bowl, after you make the French onion, you know, first you caramelize the onions, which is, to me, that's just one of the, I like to do it just the way it makes my house smell.
Yeah, right. It is.
It's
good.
Such a fantastic
smell. That's my favorite soup smell. Of all time.
It was French onion soup. It was beef broth. It was a variety of spices, bay leaves, little rosemary.
You put the cheese on top, right?
Well, of course you have to put the cheese.
Because sometimes, you know, you have to be careful when you go to a restaurant. You have to say French onion, because if they say onion soup, you don't get the cheese on top. Yeah. It's got to be French onion,
which is still delicious in my opinion. Because the caramelized onions
are still good
to me. Make the dish,
but if you're waiting for that bubbly,
but you want the melted cheese on top, so you can peel it off of the sides of the bowl,
right?
When it goes under,
it's all crust. So, which kind do you put on
the broiler? A correct French onion soup uses Gruyere cheese,
right? So that's what you use, or no?
I did, but. In the past, when I've made it and I couldn't find Gruyere, or it was just too stupidly expensive,
yeah, I know, it's crazy.
Then I just get Swiss cheese.
Yeah,
Gruyere
is kind of a French Swiss. Yeah,
Gruyere is just basically Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
When I made it on TV, I took I shredded the Gruyere and put it on, and I don't think I would do that again.
Oh,
because I think slices and are then, better
so
on
that
top
it melts
of the bowl,
so in it one
melts,
piece,
melts over the bowl.
Yeah, because then you get the good. Hanging crust when it melts.
Yeah, which is great if you don't have to clean the bowl yourself, which is that's what I was thinking with the shredded. I don't want to have to get a chisel out to clean these.
So now did you make the gnocchis or what did you do?
No, I just bought the package. Yeah.
So how many would you, like a bowl or a cup did you make?
No, I made serving of maybe five or
oh, so how many?
Seven.
So you had a lot of gnocchi in there.
About two packages.
Oh, wow.
Two 16-ounce packages in there. So every spoonful.
Oh, you get a gnocchi.
You get some caramelized onion. You get the delicious broth. And you get some light pillowy gnocchi.
With the broth and the onion taste secreted into the beautiful, delicious pillow.
Infused into the pillow.
Oh.
With a shroud of melted cheese on top of it. Heaven for a chilly fall day.
Man.
Got the full recipe up at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. You can get the recipe, WGNTV.com /DeanCooks.
Now, do you make any of these things at home first?
Yeah.
And afterwards, like for instance, now you got such a great reaction. Will you make that again at home, or
sure.
Will you? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Okay, so it's not like you just sort of this isn't just for show. You actually
no. I mean, I test them out at home. I try things out at home. What works? What doesn't work? And then I usually make a version that I can show at the end of the segment because I've got only 4 minutes to do the segment. So you know, I show the preparation as much as I can, and then here's what it looks like when it's done.
I saw you chopping the onion.
Yeah. Well, I like
Jack Papin with the knife, but you weren't bad.
I would disagree with you on that.
Oh, really?
I think I chop an onion more efficiently than Jacques Papin, and I gladly would challenge him to an onion chopping any day of the week because I think I'm fairly proficient with that. Interestingly, there is a bit of controversy among people who cook.
What?
Of the best way to chop an onion.
Oh, really? What? What, pray tell?
It's too complicated.
Oh, you mean like the do it like the have all that right. Whole thing?
All right. So I take
all right.
I take the onion. I take the non-root side of an onion and chop it off. So it's flat.
Right. Yeah.
Then I take this flat side that I've now created and let's put that down on the cutting board and I slice the onion in half.
Mm-hmm.
Then I take the skin off, all the dried skin.
Oh, skin's still on at this point.
Yeah, I leave all that on while I'm at this point.
Right.
But then once I've got the skin off, I make vertical slices in each half, and then...
This sounds like Pythagorean theorem to me. It's too much geometry.
It's too much. It's almost too complicated. But the way that I do it is very efficient because it slices vertically and then horizontally, but creates diced pieces.
Little squares. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's much more efficient.
Mm,
and some chefs don't know what they're doing when they're
cutting. Look at you. Wow, you are...
Slicing their hands off. I'll challenge anyone to an onion slicing.
Wow. I didn't know that I touched such a touchy topic.
I'll show you tree time. Tree time this year.
You should do a vegetable slicing.
I am going to bring onions to that. You will not even smell pine trees at that place when I'm done with them next week. All right, so this coming Wednesday, what I'm going to do, because I did soup for autumn this past Wednesday, I'm going to do a nice autumnal salad, which I think can be just as delicious depending on what you put in it. So, you know, it's a nice green lettuce salad. I like to use romaine. You can use any kind of salad that you want. But what I put into it that makes it autumnal,
dry leaves.
I take tree bark.
Crunchy leaves. Texture.
I take a sweet potato and dice it up into small dices and roast
it. Now, how do you cut that, Dean?
This is a great radio talk.
So a sweet potato, raw or cooked?
No, well, I
boiled.
When I cook it, no. I bake it because
baked.
It keeps all the it intensifies the flavor. I'm going to bake it.
Nice.
So now I've got this wonderful baked potato that I've cut into dice little small pieces. I'll take a butternut squash and do the same thing. So I've got these wonderful autumnal flavors. I'll put some dried cranberries in the salad. I'll put some maybe some apples into the salad.
Mm.
And I'll make kind of a vinaigrette, except normally I would use a red wine vinegar. I'll use apple cider vinegar.
Nice.
So it's got some nice, very autumnal kind of flavors in the salad. I'll throw maybe some nice chopped walnuts in there as well. Super simple, really delicious autumnal salad. I'm going to make it this coming
and week. A maple leaf right. And a dried maple leaf
and
on top
and some tree bark,
right?
Because I'm a sap that way. Okay, that's it. So wonderful to see you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you
by.
For inviting me,
Elton Jim Toronto. Your play. Super quick, Inherit the Wind.
Yes, Inherit the Wind at the Edge of the Wood Theater, edgeofthewood.com for tickets November 7th through the 23rd.
All right, sounds great. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Bob Sirott Show between 8 and 8:30. the WGN Morning News. Hamp and OB getting ready to preview the Bears and Raiders game.
Yahoo!
That's coming up today. All right.